roll call.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Boyle?
Present.
Mr. Skaggs?
Present.
Mr. Elson?
Present.
Hey, we have a quorum.
Excellent. So we will roll into the call to the public. At this time, members of the public may address the committee during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes, pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H. The committee members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. With that, I'll open it up for anybody in person first and then virtual. All right, please step forward, and it's walkie-talkie, so you can sit down if you'd like. And
3 minutes, I think.
Okay, make sure to say your name first and then proceed.
Good,
thank you.
Good morning, members of the committee and staff. My name's, by way of introduction, David Swartz, and I just wanted to let you know that I started in 1988 and have been involved with regulations since it began in, realistically, August of 1998. So anyway, have been a part of all the statutory framework, all the rules packages since then, and any other statutory or rules changes throughout the history of our licensing. So anyway, if you see me raise my hand, there are new people on the committee, so I just wanted to make sure you knew that I can provide that historic or, you know, maybe change any blind spots that exist, just so that you know kind of the history of licensing here. So anyway, just wanted to let you know. Thanks, Tim.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schwartz.
My name is Andrew Harshman. I'm a licensed home inspector here. Anyways, I just had two comments or questions. One, I know we're looking at changing the rules, and just an thought would be when we send out new ones, maybe we can take a new one with the stuff that's crossed out and the stuff that's highlighted that was additional, so people can like visualize better the changes instead of just sending out a blank white and black document, letting inspectors know so we can update and make the proper changes without having to like compare both side by side. And then the other thing was, I have another inspector friend who's not here, but he hired somebody who hadn't had his parallels yet. So he went through his 30 parallels with my friend, and then he had to wait 5 months to fire him and then rehire him in five more months when he finally got approved. And it just seems like a long time. I know I took about 6 weeks, and you know, even that was, you know, probably normal feeling, but 5 months seems like a long time to have to wait to finally get approved. So I don't know if there's a way you guys can think about speeding up the process. I believe, unless I'm mistaken, that now you have somebody on staff that only does those applications, but maybe we need more of those, or maybe we need more volunteers, but that's just a thought.
All right, thank you. Kurt, is there anyone online that wishes to speak?
I do not see anyone online.
Okay, well, with that, we'll close down the call to the public and circle back on some of those. Depending on if anything is recovered, we might need to agendize some of those items for a future matter, but for now we'll take them under advisement. We will then move on to the adoption of the minutes. I believe everybody has reviewed the October 3rd, 2023 meeting minutes, and so I will open it up for discussion or a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I have no problems with the minutes. I think it's reflected properly. I'd like to make a motion to accept the minutes.
Excellent.
My name's Keith Smith.
Yeah, this is Roger Skaggs. I second the motion.
All right. Is there any discussion? All right. Having heard none, we will go with the a vote. All those in favor of approving the October 3rd, 2023 meeting minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
I'm an aye.
All right, I'll let him push the button and say aye.
Yes, aye.
Excellent. And then again, all opposed? Or any opposed? All right, motion passes. Then we will move on to the first item here under 5A, appointment of new committee chairman. Open it up for anyone to for open discussion or nominations.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. You're doing such a great job. I'd like to make a motion. We appoint you as the chairman, Scott Sales.
Roger Skaggs, I'll second that motion.
Okay. Are there? Thank you. Are there any other one? Is there anybody else that would like to propose a nomination? Okay. Let's see. So then we'll go to open discussion. Is there any discussion before we vote?
Yeah. Where did you come from?
I claim Kingman is my home, Kingman, Arizona.
Yeah, I was thinking from the BTR. I mean, you were on some other committee or something?
No, he's on the BTR. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I'm the engineering member on the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. My understanding is there needs to be an architect from the board or an engineer from the board on this committee as part of the rules. So I was nominated as part of that open discussion at a board meeting, and so I accepted that nomination. Everybody voted me in, so that's why I'm here. And nope, glad to be here. It's exciting. Like to know a lot more about all the different disciplines of the board, since we're a very diverse overall board.
Thank you for clarifying.
He's very professional too.
Thank you for clarifying that, Scott. And just Roger, for further clarification, the statute states that an architect or engineer board member and a public board member. So Mr. Smith is our public board member serving on the committee, and then Mr. Sales would be the engineer.
Yeah, I was aware of that. I just wanted it for the record.
Oh, you're so okay.
Excellent. Well, let's, I guess we'll do a roll call on this one, Mr. Hayden, if you will.
Mr. Smith?
What do you want me to say? Oh, yes. I approve.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Mr. Boyle?
Aye.
Mr. Skaggs?
Aye.
Mr. Elson?
Aye.
Hey, motion carries.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. I hope to live up to your high marks. So
you will.
All right. Well, we will dive right into things. We have a, under 5B, we have a rule package update, which, looking at items, seems to be quite intensive. And Kurt has his arm hand raised over there.
I was actually going to make a suggestion that you jump further down into the agenda, into the AAG training, committee chairman roles and responsibilities, as you are now a new chairperson. You may want to have... We've discussed that a little bit with this.
That is a phenomenal idea. And I know Mr. Donald is well prepped for this.
Can I second that?
So with that, that sounds good, probably good for everybody to have. Never hurts for more training, in my opinion. So we will jump down to agenda item 6, AAG training, committee chairman roles and responsibilities. Take it away.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulations on the successful election. I'll keep this fairly brief, and what I'd like to do is also be able to answer any questions having to do with this. But essentially, as a committee chair, the role is to conduct the meeting, to run the course of the meeting. There is an agenda for every meeting, as is required under Arizona's open meeting law. And it is the chair's job to ensure that the committee follows that agenda and to ensure that the timing and the flow of the meeting are taken care of. So, for example, the committee chair has the absolute responsibility to determine who may speak, when they may speak, for how long they may speak. With the call to the public, for example, typically the board and committee set a standard no more than 3 minutes with the call to the public. As board chair, you can technically stop somebody before then. If you feel, for example, that they are being argumentative, they're saying something that has nothing to do with the board, they're simply abusing committee or board members, you have the ability to shut down the call to the public at a certain point when, in your judgment, it's getting out of control, so to speak. When it comes to any item on the agenda, for example, with review, discussion, and possible action on the following, substantive policy statement number 11, you may determine that members of the public are able to speak. You may determine they are not able to speak. You may feel that the committee does not need input from anybody on an agenda item unless the agenda item is specifically agendized for the public to be able to speak. And even then, you do have the ability to shut things down. You have the ability to allow discussion with the public. If there is something that somebody appears on an agenda item and they have something to say about it and you want to go deeper into it. But really the control and pacing of the meeting are within the powers of the chair of the meeting. You also control when the meeting adjourns. You can adjourn the meeting simply by saying this meeting is adjourned. I'm not suggesting you ever do that if it gets too close to lunchtime, but certainly that's within your authority. Additionally, you can limit discussion by committee members. So when if somebody makes a motion, somebody makes a second to that motion, discussion ensues, you can stop a discussion anytime you would like and move forward with a vote on the outstanding motion. This can be helpful sometimes because occasionally discussions can diverge down rabbit holes that eventually have to be stopped. Those are really the biggest aspects of it. Your responsibility is to control the meeting, to run the meeting, to ensure that it's running within the open meeting guidelines. Now, that said, because that is an enormously big area, are there any questions about what your roles or responsibilities are?
That sounds good. I don't know if everybody knew that before they voted, but it's too late now. So, with that, I guess...
Recall. No, sorry, we're not agendized for a recall.
No, and it's, you know, I see my role on this as the engineer member. We had the home inspector's public member and everything. You know, that discussion in there, I'll provide my input. Where is, but you're all the experts in that field because you're home inspectors, and that's what this committee meeting is about. So happy to move us forward and try to get this entire agenda done in a timely manner. So I don't know, does anybody else have any questions for Mr. Donald on that subject?
Scott, this is Keith Smith. I have a can you go over our responsibilities as members?
Technically, we're agendized for committee chairman roles and responsibilities.
He sent me off. Did you notice that?
Okay. Would you like to have that as a future agendized item for the next meeting?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. We will bounce back up to item 5B, the rule package update. I don't know if we're showing it up on the screen or what's the what was the plan on that? I know there were some... a lot of red lines in the document.
I think you're thinking of the supplemental checklist. The rule package is just going to be an update from me. So it wouldn't be for GIRC, the Governor's Rules and Regulatory Committee. They asked questions of me. It was actually their meeting. Their study session was the day of the board meeting, so I had to leave the meeting and come back to have a board meeting. But they only asked two questions. There was no issues. The following week, they agendized it under their consent agenda, so they went through no problems whatsoever. On March 8th, we sent out a mass email to all home inspectors to let them know, hey, this is coming. Here's the old standards. Here's the new standards. Here's what it looks like with the red lines and the blue, indicating what's changed on it and that we're going to update them in the future. The plan right now is to agendize sending this to the Secretary of State at the next board meeting, which is next week, Tuesday. And if they say, yay, send it to Secretary of State, there should be no issues in doing that because it's been approved by just about everybody except for the board. And if they say yay, then it will be sent to Secretary of State, and 60 days after the filing date is when they will go into effect. We will send a mass email to that effect that day, as well as 30 days after, and probably another one the day of, indicating all these updates. And we do plan to send snail mail.
So, and there, I missed some of the, you said, what was the potential date when they might start the 60-day countdown?
It is the filing of the rules to the Secretary of State.
Okay, and we don't know when that general date might be. It could be whenever it gets pushed through their system.
I presume it's going to be next week. The board will make a motion to send it to the Secretary of State. If everything is in order, all the documentation is correct and accurate that is submitted to the Secretary of State, then they will indicate that everything is good and proper, and that will start the countdown. They will also let me know the exact date.
Great. Okay. No, that sounds great. I know that's been a long time coming, so it'll be good to see that finally catch up with time. Did anybody have any questions for Kurt on that subject? Okay, we'll move on down, just cruising on down through here on fives.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, this is Roger Skaggs. Just because it's probably on everybody's mind, I request or suggest that we go to 5H to get some information on that agenda item at this point.
Are we ready to talk about that one at this time?
Sure, that's going to be kind of a short conversation. So, quick recap, HB 2253, that was the board's continuation bill. We presented in the House and the Senate to the House Commerce Committee and then to the Senate Government Committee. Originally, it was heard in the House, passed the House with a recommendation to continue the board for 8 years, was then transmitted to the Senate, where Senate Government Chair Senator Hoffman decided not to agendize it and have it heard in committee, which it has to be heard in committee and come out of committee before it can be put on the Senate floor and then ultimately sent to the governor's office. So there was a tremendous outreach done over the weekend, pretty much, because once we knew the final agenda was out Thursday at 5 o'clock and that the board's continuation bill was still not on it, we sent out a mass email to let everybody know that's registered under the board. I don't know if that was the reason or not, but yesterday we heard that it's anticipated that we will be added to a striker bill and heard in committee on Thursday. However, we won't know that until the amended agenda is released today, probably at 4:59 p.m. So we'll be watching for that. Again, that's what's anticipated, but we don't know that. And a striker bill is, we don't know how to explain that well. It means HB 2253 isn't our bill anymore. It means that any language can be added to a strike everything bill where it could be. Last year, I think there was, as an example, one about Homeland Security, and it was a striker bill, and it turned into something that was broadband internet for rural areas. So what could ultimately be in the language could be anything. So we have no idea, and I wish I could give you something more concrete than that. Of course, once we know, we'll let you know.
Okay, and then I believe anybody can go on online to the Senate site, go down, dig down through the buttons, find the committee, and see this agenda whenever it's sent around or published.
Can we make a comment?
Of course.
It's about the continuation.
Yeah. So this is John Elson. The question I have for you, Judith, is whether or not we should continue our various reach out programs to the parties that we have prior discussed?
I mean, I can't answer that in so much as telling you what to do, but I would think that all reach out would be a positive, good thing to help educate our legislatures and all parties involved of the importance of these professions that are overseen by the agency.
Yes, thank you.
So, this is Roger Skaggs. If it's not on the agenda at 4:59, what then?
I don't really have an answer for you, Roger. I don't know if there's some. I'm going to say this, and it's not probably not very professional. Scott might give me the stink eye, but you know, some backdoor voodoo magic that can happen in a conjunction with the budget bill or something at the end of session. But I really don't know. I've never been anywhere close to this kind of situation before, so we'll see.
Okay, well, thank you. And answering the question to the best of your ability, thank you.
Okay, yeah, that was a quick topic there. More to come. Everybody will be waiting to see what occurs. Okay, we'll now jump back up to the update and finalize report checklist supplement. And so on that one, there's a number of track changes versions on the file. I think probably open it up for discussion on there. I know everybody's had a chance to review that. I have a few comments myself, but I will defer those to the rest of the committee to kick it around. And I see up on the screen and also shared for those following along at home, you can see the document that's up there. So with that, I guess we'll just open it up for... I guess we'd need a motion first, go through the motions and have a discussion.
It's John Ellison, a motion to move forward.
And by that, accepting the changes as is?
Well, I think we should take it to page by page.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, so then the idea is general discussion first, yeah. Talk about it, and then, okay, we can go that route.
And Mr. Chair, I mean, hopefully everybody understands the need for an updated report checklist because we are required to do this report checklist, as it's stated in the Arizona Administrative Code. And since we have impending rule changes coming up, we wanted to ensure that the report checklist was in accordance with our new rule changes.
All right. Well, we'll go page by page then. There's only, I think, 523. So I'm just kidding. There's less than that. It's a nominal amount. So we'll just start on page one, and that's what Kurt has up there, I think. Kurt, does your version have the track changes on it?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess we'll just go to each.
Oh. Perfect.
Yeah. So any discussion on page one?
I think it looks great.
Of course, the date of February 19th, 2002, I mean, that remains to be added.
If you can look on the screen, I don't know if you guys can see it, but it has been crossed out, the February 19th, 2020. We won't know that date, and it'll be, have to be
right.
Put in once it's actually...
Yep. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. The date remains to be seen.
Gotcha. My apologies.
No problem.
All right, so we'll put a note on that to say update with finalized date, just so we don't lose track of that. All right, page two.
This is John Ellison. I'd like to propose a easy change to number five under 2.0 and have first case caps for the word standards, professional, and practice, consistent with the verbiage underneath it.
Mr. Donald, is that with the capital, with the bolding and everything, does that fit in line with all the other capitalized and bolding of, because those are standard phrases that go to a a glossary of terms and definitions. Mr. Donald will need you to push the button, please.
All right. Thank you. I believe that'll be okay, but I also think Ledge Council will probably take a look at it over at Kirk, and they'll make an ultimate determination. But yeah, I think that would be fine.
Okay. You're testing me on this with first chairman duties here. Like, I'm just going to not push the button and see if he's on his game here. I'm watching everybody here.
I need clarification there. Sorry, this document wouldn't be going before Kirk.
Oh. I'm sorry, you're correct. This is a report checklist. Yep. That would be perfectly fine to capitalize it, as this is simply a tool that's going to be used. The board is just providing this tool to home inspectors, but it has no legislative or statutory or legal import.
Then can we add a smiley face after that?
Actually, you could.
Hopefully the nays have it on that one. So on this one, just I see a hand raised out there. So what I think I'd like to do is go through the entire document and then potentially come back and get any potential questions from the floor at that time. So just because some of the things might get covered later on or vice versa. So just to make sure we get through the entire document, and if we have time, we can circle back to those that were able to spend some time and join us here today in the audience. So, okay, so the discussion was to bold AZ standards of professional practice throughout, and anywhere in the document where that is, that's also gets bolded.
The recommendation was to do first case caps. Whether it gets bolded is the choice that's made, but I would like the AZ standards of professional practice to be, this is John Elson, by the way, to be the same as it is stated in the verbiage underneath, where the word standards, professional, and practice are first case caps.
Okay, sorry, I misunderstood a little bit. Yes, capitalization. So, yeah, strike anything that I mentioned about bolding, because it was just capitalization. Okay, on we go. Is there anything else on page 2? Having heard none, we will move on to page 3.
Okay, this is John Elson again. On number 13, I would like to have, after the colon under common examples, the word viewed be first case caps. On number 16, there is a random slash mark after the period, and I would like to focus my time on number 20.
I don't see a slash or anything on 16. Is it the very end of the sentence, or where are you?
On 16, after the closed parentheses at the very end of the sentence, there's a, I don't know, there's a random mark there. Maybe it's just the copy.
I just see a period after the close bracket.
Right, so it's, I don't know. It's, maybe it's my printer.
So how old are you? No, I'm kidding.
May I continue on my suggestions for number 20?
Definitely.
Okay, I will try to make this brief, but without going into great detail, the use of the term by using any available method is inconsistent with what I think we should be recommending. I think a recommendation should be per manufacturer's instructions or the woodblock reversal test. And I've done pretty extensive research, not only through the Jordan Systems Manufacturing Association, but also through many different organizations. And if you go to the CPSC safety alert, they talk about the use of a nominal 2x4 woodblock. There are inspectors that have tried for years to establish a protocol that uses paper towel, a roll of paper towels, that pretty much has been dispelled. And so I would like to have this be established that the auto reverse reaction principally should be done per the manufacturer's instructions, which would be on a per manufacturer basis, meaning, you know, depending on who the manufacturer is of the door, you should follow their guidelines. And if you can't get to their guidelines, then you follow the 2x4 wood block reversal test, putting the wood block down on its largest side underneath the door.
This is Keith Smith. I'd like to make a comment on that. I just think we should leave it up to the inspector to determine how to do that.
This is Steve Boyle. I would also agree with that. I mean, if it's just kind of unreasonable, I think, to check with every door manufacturer on how they, might want you to test these doors. And if we're testing every single garage door, which we're required to, eventually, if you use the wood block method, you're going to end up breaking a percentage of those doors.
I disagree. And I would urge you to go through and do some research and look at what the DASMA standards are and look at what the manufacturers are establishing. I couldn't find one manufacturer that said you shouldn't be using wood block to do the test. And so the problem is, I think we need to provide a higher level of guidance to the inspection community to not just choose whatever available method they may think is appropriate. That's actually how you would potentially break a garage door. And if somebody comes back, at least you say, I followed this standard, which is to use wood block. I agree with you in terms of trying to find the manufacturer's guidelines. That would be very difficult. But what we're saying is, use the guidelines if you know them, or use a wood block.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I would like to point out for the committee members that in this checklist, as it is just a tool and it has no legal force and it doesn't constitute any standard that anybody would be held to, it would be important to point out if you're going to require them to use a specific process for number 20, for example, that they understand they can actually do any test they want. The only requirement is that they meet the standards laid out by the rules.
This is Steve Boyle. Couldn't we solve this by just striking the end of that sentence and just say, including equipment, photo eye sensors, and auto reverse reaction?
Yeah, perfect.
I guess I like it.
As part of this, at the end, we'll have a vote on the overall thing. So as we go through, it'd be nice to have a general concurrence, I think. Not that I think we have to do a yes-no vote on each one of these things, but I just want it for that discussion. You know, before we get there, you know, just as a straw poll, is everybody in favor of the is everybody in favor of that striking the last part of that sentence and leaving it open?
Yeah, I can support that. Yes, it's Roger Skaggs.
Okay, but no, that's the type of discussion we want to have. We want to make sure it's good for everybody around there and don't want to break any garage doors testing things, ideally.
Perfect. And the thing to keep in mind is that using any available method is going to be in the standards.
Exactly.
So, you know, whoever wants to use that particular phrase or sentence or whatever it is, you know, they can use it.
All right, Mr. Elson, did you have anything else on that page?
No, thank you.
Okay, I had a few questions, comments on page 3. So up on item 12, I just had some concern related to just at the end of the sentence, or when dangerous or adverse situations are suspected. I guess that's just, it's slightly vague there. I guess it's one of those things where we're saying, hey, you need to go in there until they find a point where maybe it's not a good idea, but what if they feel it's a good idea going in and they're like, uh-oh, maybe I should never even got in here in the first place. And then some other thoughts of OSHA confined space training and other things popped into my mind through this whole thing, and we're basically directing them, inspectors must enter the underfloor crawl space except when access obstructed. Anyway, I just want to open that up for thoughts, and with that in mind, is that sentence still agreeable to everybody here?
This is Keith Smith. I think the wording's fine the way it is, but I understand your concern on that.
This is John Elson. I think that the difficulty here for all inspectors is to make these discretionary decisions on site when they encounter, raised foundation, and they've got a screen there, and they want to take pictures, and how far do they go underneath it to take pictures to at least establish to their clients that they've done something. I don't particularly have a problem with the verbiage. I think anybody that's in our profession knows that they have to make those on-site decisions.
And would this be an item where, say, someone did not note in the report there that they say, hey, you know what, I suspected that, it might have been tough to get in or out of this. Is that something that this sentence would be something that would need to be stated one way or the other? Otherwise, someone could come back and say, well, you didn't state it, and so you didn't go look at it, but you didn't, state it.
All limitations should be in the report, so if somebody's not going to get under there, they're going to state why.
Okay. And then down on item 21, we talk about decks, balconies, stoops, steps, stairways, and porches. And then after that we say, observe and report on condition as well as condition of installed railings. Could we not just put railings in the first part of the sentence for decks, balconies, stoops, steps, areaways, railings, and porches, and then say observe and report on condition?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have no problem with that.
21.
We talk about all those items, and we say as well as this railing. So just pulling railings up to the beginning of the sentence or beginning of the statement.
Kurt, you have an issue with that at all? Is that? I mean, you're the man that knows all this stuff.
Okay, so that would be part of any.
Put railings in. This is Roger Skaggs.
Yeah, but now where do you want to put it? At the end, or should it be?
My vote would be to
alphabetically.
Yep.
So change the whole thing.
Just the front. We'll alphabetize decks, balconies, stoops, steps, areaways, railings, and porches. Okay, any more questions or comments on page 3? All right, on to page 4. Okay, my only comment on page 4 is on item 31. It's just it says skylights, chimneys. I'd say skylights and chimneys would be my only. There's a comma there, and because it had three. Anyway, doing that would be it. And then down on item 43. The water heating equipment and operation controls. At the end it says, as well as condition of normal operating controls. Is it well versed in there what operating controls are with all the new technology now, Wi-Fi, apps, etc.? Does that cover all those?
Well, that's just in reference to the standards. It's stated that way.
Okay.
That's why it's in there.
Right. I don't have anything on page 4. Feels good.
Yeah, keep in mind, we'll see it over and over again, it is a visual inspection. Automatic safety control or whatever is damaged, it doesn't matter if it's leaking or whatever, but Yeah.
All right, on to page 5. All right, so on page 5, I had a few of them on here. The first one was item 50. And again, I'm going to defer to a lot of the other folks here, but just in the wording in the center, it starts talking about including main copper wire, aluminum wire, or aluminum bus connections. Could we remove the copper and aluminum and just say including wire type? Again, looking toward the future of whatever wire might be out there, it doesn't specifically go with aluminum or copper.
If there's a need to do that, I guess we could, but
I guess it's just for discussion. If it's a big idea, if it's something that you think that might be an issue for inspectors, then I'd like to clarify it. Otherwise, I'm fine leaving it as is.
This is Steve Boyle. I think if we're no longer requiring that they state the type, then you could strike that altogether. Because all we're required to report on with the new standard is condition.
Right.
Okay. So that was, we'll just say, including wire type or including wire type and aluminum bus connections.
I would take out the entire section in parentheses.
What's everybody thinking?
So not being a home inspector is, if you just say report on main service entry conductors, is that, that's clear what that means?
Yeah.
Without saying anything at all, then I was just going to say it's there or something like that, and I mean, I don't know. Is that really, is it sufficient? Just asking.
Well, the condition would be either satisfactory, usually, or, you know, needs repair.
I mean, this is John Elson. The problem with this on a practical note is that you oftentimes can't even see it. So now we get into sort of driving for specificity in an area where I think most of us who are practicing inspectors would say we can't see it on most of them anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so the potential motion might remove everything inside the brackets, or would remove all the bracket information. So my only other comment on 50 is it says note and then says you may report. A lot of the other spots says inspector, so I would say replace you with inspector.
Agreed.
And then on item 52, a new item there, it talks about, at the end, it talks about overcurrent protection devices, and that's the same, basically, starter as item 56. Is that a concern for anyone? It seems like we're potentially tying things to another item inside of the checklist.
I think 52 is specifically referring to the main disconnect. So that's going to be the one breaker that shuts off everything, and then the other one is referring to the individual branch circuits.
Then with the title in 52, should it say main overcurrent protection device, or is main overcurrent device good? Okay.
Yeah, I think that it's adequate.
All right, 52 stays as is. The only other one would be down on item 60, where we say ground fault, like the ampersand arc faults. I just get rid of that and just spell out and. All I don't have anything else on 5. Anybody else?
This is John Elson again. This is wordsmithing on number 59, where it says, on its exterior walls, at least that's what my copy says, when you use an apostrophe, that is as short for it is.
So change to the.
Get rid of the apostrophe in the word its.
Number
15. On number 59, so it should be on its, I-T-S, without the apostrophe, exterior wall.
All right, good catch there. On to page 6. Up at the top on item 62, just more of a, we talk about carbon monoxide alarms, then we jump into the sentence of CO detectors. I'd propose we bracket in CO earlier in the statement just so that it all ties together.
Agreed.
So is that right in the title then? Put it right there.
I'd say put in the title right before alarms. And then on 64, it says we're adding primary to the statement first. So it says primary energy source now. Is that going to be a concern? Because you have multiple ways the facility could be heated. And should they be looking, like, if they're just looking at the primary one, do they need to do some for the other ones? Or, you know, is it the home inspector to make that call of what the primary heating is? Say they might have electrical and gas heating. I don't know. There's an interesting. I just thrown that out there for discussion. That's most of my stuff is to throw it out for discussion.
Really good. Yeah, give you an idea of where this is all coming from. The primary source would be like a gas furnace. Gas would be the primary source. You still need electricity to operate the system as a whole because there's a fan or there might be like electronic pilot light or something of the sort. So that's why primary is in there. That's why we put primary in there, because there's,
you know, multiple sources.
There can be multiple sources. Yeah. It could also extend into solar systems as well. You know, what is the primary source? Is it solar, or is it, you know, electricity coming from the power company?
Everybody's fine with it? All right. I don't have any other comments on the rest of the entire document, so... is there any other questions on page 6?
On John Elson, on number 68, we, at least on mine, we have a period after the word condition.
Okay.
And then we have a parentheses after materials before the period. Keith, you did a great job on this.
This is why we need all these eyes.
Okay, page 7.
And number 85, the after the word leaking, I think that observe should be first case caps.
Sounds good.
On 84, should the D be off of observed?
Could you repeat that, please?
Number 84, it says observed and report.
Yeah, thanks, Julie.
I sent Julie an email to bring that up, by the way.
Mm-hmm. On 85, we have first case caps for observe.
Yeah.
All right, and the word's telling me we need a period at the end on 58 or 85. After components. Okay, anything else on page 7? On to page, oh, short page 8. Four items on page 8. Anything on page 8?
This doesn't have the pool and spa.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So
I'll reference
this. This was the changes to the original standards, and then we added the pool and spa.
Okay.
I think we're missing a period at the end of 84 as well.
While Mr. Elson's looking up any last little comments there, Mr. Donald, so within my rights as chairman, if I wanted to call on someone from the audience to provide their thoughts on something, I could within my abilities?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. The only thing you would want to be aware of is you would want to be consistent. So if you're going to let members of the public speak, you would want to open it up to members of the public as opposed to simply saying we're going to listen to this one person but nobody else can say anything. You can then control how long everybody can speak, but you do want to be consistent in your treatment of the public.
Definitely. No. Good point. We'll finish with everything here first. Mr. Elson, did you have anything else?
Not on the main checklist. I will during pool and spa.
Mr. Chair, if I may make a comment. Some of the items have no space to put anything between. So if you see like 84 has that space, but like 83 doesn't. Yeah, quite a few of them have the no space.
Well, it does in the corrected version. If we go over the corrected one without the blue lines, it's all corrected. So.
Okay.
Maybe we ought to look at that.
That's what I was referencing.
Yeah. So if you go to the corrected version right now, that's also where the pool and spa is added to make it one document.
All right, thank you.
And if we're going to get into truly wordsmithing this, then I think we need to look at all the spacing with before and after the dashes. Because, again, it's not the same, and we're talking about, you know, how deep do we go into this? That's just a comment.
I think we could, because we'll be seeing this in a, there's been some modifications to this. We're not going to see it fully updated on here. So to be able to make a vote, we're going to have the fully updated version from staff to see these items incorporated to make sure they are what we're going to be voting on based on what we're saying and conveying. So I would
think
put an item together to have them standardize it as best they can during the updating process.
I think Kurt is making corrections as we're going.
I'll check with our legal counsel here on this one. I think that if these minor corrections that you're talking about right now, if we can implement those, that any how would it be best phrased? Got like any very minor spacing issues or something would need to come back to the committee that we could do any minor grammatical?
Yeah, the committee today could accept it in terms of substantive content and leave board staff to handle any formatting at the end.
And that would be really helpful since it's going to go before the board next Tuesday.
Okay. Well, with that, then we'd roll over to the non-Word file, track changes version to the pool and spa, and keep moving on down through there. So we'll go with the other part of page 8.
Okay, it's John Elson. I'll be brief. Number 105, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the term excessive sized opening should be excessively sized, if we're going to use that term. And I'd like to talk for a moment about 106. The use of the term child-resistant strainers is not an accepted technical term in the pool universe. The term should be anti-entrapment drain cover or anti-entrapment drain covers.
Okay, did anybody else have any questions or comments on page 8? I see Kurt's typing the information up there on the screen as we go. So that'll take us to the end of the tour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think with what's looking at the list here, I do appreciate everybody being able to come in, so I will open it up to members of the public, both in person and online, to provide some feedback and whether we take action on any of those or decide we want to incorporate any of those. We'll decide that afterwards, but please remember to state your name and hold the button down, and please proceed. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Swartz. I just wanted to throw out one idea because it's such a chronic problem, and this is a document to assist with the preparation of a report, is that the section 2.0, which is the very beginning, there are five requirements, and they're different in that they are required of the contract versus the report itself, and there's a chronic problem with inspectors getting that correct. So I'm just wondering if it could be boxed and then all cap at a header that said these must be contained in the inspection agreement with the client or something to that effect, something to consider. And I would only have one other thought.
Yeah, please keep going.
And the other thought is, I don't know, on the next page at roof or ceiling structure and roof structure, there's an S at the end. I don't know if you would want to pull those out. It's not usually roofs, plural structure. It's usually roof structure and ceiling structure.
Which item specifically?
I'm sorry.
10 and 11.
Sorry, 10 and 11.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was down in the roof piece. So, yeah, 11. That's good. Number 11.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Roger Skaggs. I fully support Mr. Swartz in the making a difference somehow for the agreement. Know what needs to be in the agreement, because that's usually where you open it up and open up a report, and that's the first thing that you end up catching right away is the fact that you haven't filled out the agreement correctly. So thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Mr. Yeah. Chairman, this is Keith Smith. I think it should be just left the way it is. If we highlight certain areas, now that's given somebody possibly a confusion stating, hey, this is all that I really have to report on or something. I think it should be all just the same document.
Is it that the title of Section 2.0, Purpose and Scope, is there anything that might be modified with that text to better describe what...
I think there you could probably state that. Yeah, that's a good point.
This is John Elson. I think you can conditionalize that under Purpose and Scope and state that if you want to do it parenthetically, these must be included in your agreement with the client. I agree with Mr. Swartz.
That sound good to everybody?
How are we wording it?
That's the question, isn't it? We can come back to people can ponder that. Let's just keep it rolling with the rest of the public. We can come back to this piece of it, but I want to make sure to get everybody that was kind enough to come on in and speak with us. So please make sure to mention your name and push button. Thanks.
My name is Andrew Harshman, and first of all, I appreciate everybody that's up here that pays attention to punctuation and periods and the dashes, because I like that. To go along with that, There are a lot of sentences that weren't mentioned, missing periods, and the dash spacing, that was a nice point out. All some of the dashes are underlined. And in the titles, some of the words are all capital, and some are, first of the word is capital, and like four more words aren't capital. So I don't know if that matters, but all of it just makes it look more professional. So appreciate it. Jumping back to the number 20 with the auto reverse, the new SOP says something like, with whatever methods available. It doesn't say, reversing or anything like that. But this document does say, photoize and auto reverse, which maybe all of that could be taken out. I agree 100% with you. We shouldn't even be, with DASMA standards, unless we're testing balance, we shouldn't be testing the pressure reverse. And so there's lots of standards that it's up to the home inspector to follow. I agree with the 2x4 test, but it, arguably for some people might say it damages doors. But I just think this document should line up with the SOP that it's mimicking. And so if the SOP doesn't say photoize and auto reverse, this probably shouldn't as well. And I think maybe Boyle brought that up, Mr. Boyle. Underfloor crawl spaces, I did like adding the dangerous part. That was good just because there could be a snake in there or a rat or something that you're not comfortable getting into, and having that in there I think was helpful. And then number 93, laundry ventilation. At the very end, it says condition of room ventilation if present, but it doesn't say that we have to report if it's not present, which obviously that was an update at some point, but if it's not present, there's nothing saying we have to report on it. So I think whether or not it's present or absent, we just take it out and say the condition of room ventilation. That's all.
Am I allowed to comment on that or no?
That's all for discussion there, if we wanted to entertain any or all or none or that kind of thing.
Okay, so those are very good points. I will tell you that as a sitting member of the Enforcement Advisory Committee, there have been some very difficult decisions that had to be made as a result of the term ventilation for laundry rooms. And ventilation for laundry rooms and ventilation for the dryer are not one and the same. And that's where we start to get into that confusing world of what did you ask me to do? I thought I complied. So however we decide to do this as a committee, specificity is really important. So I'm really glad that you brought that up.
So what we're all thinking and for the modifications is to get rid of the if present at the end of that sentence. So it just says observe and report on condition of room ventilation. Is that what, I think that's what the ask was, well, the thought was. Oh, make sure to throw your button down if you.
Yeah. Well, there are some laundry rooms that don't have, I do a lot of manufactured homes. There's no ventilation unless there's a window in the laundry room where there's no ventilation, so. Having basically a waffle word in there might be the thing to do. Something that can go either way.
I guess the question we're asking is whether or not we get rid of the two words, if present.
I would say leave them.
Yeah. As is.
If I may, you can also say if present or absent or something like that. Absence or presence of room ventilation. But that's just an idea.
I think that, just reading that sentence, so it's, you'd only have to, I'm assuming, make a note if it is present. If it's not present, you would then not have to say anything because you're only asking him to say if it's present. So if there's a concern of one way or the other, I would think to make it more clear, but what's say everyone?
My opinion is that we strike the words if present just for the exact reason that you just established, Mr. Chairman, because that creates the fact that we have to report on the condition of room ventilation one way or the other, no matter what.
Okay. This is not necessarily a suggestion, but just something to kind of bring up to discussion. Would it not be better if we just separate dryer ventilation and laundry room ventilation into two different lines?
It's John Elson. I agree.
You know, I remember we're putting on the standards.
Right.
I knew there was something that we did it this way because we wanted everything covered. It was separate than something didn't get covered, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I like it all under one item, just so it doesn't get potentially misplaced. I mean, you have different sentences in there, so to me it's clear.
So, just quick question from the non-expert here. So, laundry room ventilation requires separate reporting from the dryer ventilation? Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
And frankly, that's the problem on what were the standards, is that it's stated that inspectors shall observe kitchen, bathroom, and laundry venting systems. And so people would always get confused at what are you asking me to actually observe and report on? And it's particularly important with a gas dryer. Right, so that's we always had this confusion with people. Did they comply? Did they not comply?
Well, I'm confused right now reading laundry ventilation because it says observe and report on presence and condition, and then we have dryer venting in parentheses right there. And so to me, it looks like we're just asking for the dryer ventilation, not laundry
room. If you
read
on, and it says observe and report on the condition of the room ventilation. So there's two in that
if
one.
Present.
I think,
if
well,
present.
Yeah, we're getting rid of that.
But
there's two things to report on in laundry venting. I think it's covered pretty good.
But I do agree that the bracket inside of there where we say dryer venting, it seems odd in the middle of the sentence there. I know we're trying to emphasize dryer venting, but then we go on to the next sentence with dryer venting. So,
this is Jen Elson, at the risk of what the term would be, sort of, you know, having this discussion go on too long. The reason that I think it would be advantageous to follow Mr. Boyle's recommendation is that then you have people who are using this checklist and they have to complete those two points separately. They're not blended together. Therefore, they have to go through the process of actually checking off those two different components, and I think that will help us to not have the confusion when people submit reports.
I like that. I agree, for what it's worth.
Okay, so going back to Mr. Boyle, what are you recommending here on this one?
Do we have a copy of what the new standards are for this?
Yeah.
What does the new standard itself say? Yeah, so I would still think it's best to separate the two. I think this is the only one in this report checklist supplement that ties two things together that are really not the same thing at all. I don't see the downside, any potential downside in just adding another line item.
So 94. Make it 94,
yes.
And then just extend it?
Yes,
yeah, that's fine.
So the latest standards, Kurt, is October 27th, 2023. Yes, that's correct. Okay, so to me, this confirms the fact that we haven't really made it any clearer in the standards, and I think what Mr. Boyle is establishing here is something that will clarify for all inspectors and for parallel inspectors, and they need to cover both of those areas. I think it's even more important.
One thing to keep in mind is that the checklist can't clarify any of the standards or statutes or rules for licensees. If they are unclear about any of them, they would need to consult legal counsel.
Mr. Boyle, do you need a few minutes to craft up the sentence for the new item 94?
Yes.
Just to help Kurt out there on it. So I see 94, and there's a lot of white space.
We're looking for one to be the room and one to be the dryer bin, right? One is laundry room ventilation, and then the other one is the dryer bin. So we'll just pull those.
Yeah, room ventilation and then dryer bin.
So for note 93, I would have the first words say laundry ventilation, laundry room ventilation, rather. And then I would just copy the kitchen ventilation definition, swap out the word kitchen for laundry room. And I'll work on number 94 for you.
Okay, I don't want to cause a big problem, but again, just asking, not knowing. Does laundry room indicate wherever the laundry facilities are? So if the washer and dryer is in the kitchen or whatever, that's also the laundry room because it's there? Okay.
Yeah, I know we have another. I just want to make sure we're catching. We have a few things that are outstanding. I don't want to get too far ahead here, but you're definitely next on items.
I have a recommendation for verbiage under 2.0. Shall we go back to that or shall I wait?
Wait, no, let's stay on laundry first.
Let's clean this one up first in the laundry room.
I think you just take the sentence at the end and just create a 94 out of it. Observe and report the condition of the room ventilation.
Laundry room ventilation. He's specific.
Okay. Yeah.
But then on the other hand, you know, there are some laundry rooms that are actually not rooms, they're in a closet.
Right. Well,
so should it just be laundry? Should it remain laundry ventilation rather than add the word room?
Laundry area?
Maybe we ought to just leave it as is. Covers everything.
Mr. Chair, I think Sean had a comment on this topic.
Oh, yeah, if it's on this topic, please jump on in. I guess, is there anybody else online, Kurt? No? Okay, well, please, go ahead.
Thank you. Sean Garvey. I totally identify that. A lot of luxury houses have laundry rooms or laundry facilities in primary closets or in the closet of a casita. Does that become then a laundry room? So I think you clarified that perfectly. You're hired.
So my recommendation for note 94 would be to call it dryer ventilation - observe and report on condition of visible dryer ventilation.
Pausing momentarily while Mr. Winter types in very quickly.
Observe and report on visible dryer ventilation.
Yeah, it's all there.
Laundry is the only thing that's referenced in the standards, right? The room ventilation really isn't included in the standards. It's called laundry venting system. That's it. If you want to go farther and report on a window or a fan working or not, that's going beyond the standards.
Is the term laundry venting system defined anywhere? Is there a glossary for that?
It's just
term systems is, but not laundry venting systems. I think the problem, I'll go back to what I said before. I think the problem that is, as a practical matter, most of the inspectors in the state are not going to be as intimate with the standards as the people in this room, inclusive of thank you for being here, inclusive as our, including our audience here, participants. And the problem that I have is the confusion of how the standards are written and how inspectors interpret that. When an inspector goes into a laundry room and does an inspection, what are they required to report on? That's really the crux of the issue, and whether or not the checklist is holding them to that is really what we're talking about.
Yeah. One thing the committee also needs to keep in mind is ultimately the decision about whether or not somebody has met the standard is going to be up to the investigative process, an EAC, and then ultimately the board to determine. So the committee should be careful not to go too far into the weeds in the checklist in something that somebody may then claim to try to rely upon when legally this document will have no basis whatsoever and no one will be able to use this in their defense. Even if they follow the checklist 100%, they could be found to be in violation of board statutes and rules.
Great point.
So what does that mean? We go back to the original paragraph or what?
From a drafting standpoint, the safest thing is always going to be to track the rules or the standards as closely as possible because that is going to be the legal standard they'll be held to. Regardless of whether they fill out any checklists, they will be measured against the standards.
The only comment I would make is that we're trying to help people to interpret it so that we don't have as many people coming before the EAC. I understand what you're talking about legally, and we can't alter what the standards are, but the checklist is to help people to actually do a better job.
The one problem with that is that actually the committee can't help anybody interpret the standards or rules. That would actually constitute the unlicensed practice of law. They will have to interpret them for themselves, or they can seek outside legal counsel if they have any questions regarding the interpretation of the standards.
So with that being said, I would recommend that you just keep the definition short then and keep it observe and report on presence and condition of laundry ventilation systems.
We're back to where we started.
I say leave it the way it was.
You mean leave it the way it was in this altered draft, not going way back to
I'm way back here. Because you got both. They're both stated.
Both of them are stated in 93. I'm not really sure we need to separate it. Because you're stating in the standards, it says laundry ventilation, and here we're 93 is detailing what they should be looking at. So an inspector would know that there's two things to look at, if they can.
Okay, so we're going to get rid of...
We're going to get
not
rid of
present.
If present.
If present. If present. We're going to get rid of that.
All right, so 93 stays as it was, except for, well, with the addition of the condition add-on and then removing if present at the end. So the other red text up there, yeah, goes away. And then the first part of that sentence also goes away in red. Okay.
Good.
Did we cover, or did you have any other items to mention?
Sean Garvey, based on the advice of the legal up there, I don't know if it's checklist related or more clarity and standards of practice, so I can either talk about it, we can define that, or not.
Scott, he'll shut you down.
No, shut me down. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to... agree with Mr. Ellison on point number 22. I think that's the garage door safety. I think there's some clarity that is needed in that, that the current terms put us at risk, whether that's checklist or standards of practice. because in confirmation, even with the block test, we've spoken with garage door companies, and they've said that we're at risk of damaging the door with the manufacturer instructions on there, too. So thank you for that. Part 43, I think it is, with operating controls of the water heater. I just wanted to ensure that operation... Was it that one? Operation of the controls is defined. Does that mean we're doing the igniter, thermostat, little TPR valve, stuff like that? And that might not be checklist related. That might be standard practice related as well. Normal operating controls.
I'd have to defer to Mr. Donald, but I think he's going to say that as long as it's within rules, it'll be up to the board at the time and investigation process to see if it was taken care of.
You know me very well, yes. And unfortunately, anything that's not defined in the statute or rule would only be able to be defined by the board in analyzing an existing situation.
Okay. And then, thank you. 52. I just wanted to ensure, you know, if not visible is an acceptable answer in there as well. For main overcurrent device, there are examples in condos or multifamily unit houses where you might not be able to access the main controls.
So what are you saying? What should we do?
Well, it says we need to observe and report, and so I wanted to ensure that if not visible was an acceptable answer.
I'll repeat what I just mentioned earlier about the...
And that's what I didn't know if this is the right time for that or not.
And remember, when you fill out your report, you're going to say right. That's your limitation. You couldn't observe it.
All right. No, thanks. Do we have anybody else online that would like to bring up any topics related to 5C? Kurt?
There is no one online.
I'll take that as a no. Okay. All right. So then let's circle back to 2 with the wording, the header wording on that one.
So this is John Elson. This is my recommendation subject to, you know, people wanting to add or delete. Under 2.0, purpose and scope, wherever you we decide to place it, the following 5 points must be included in your agreement with the client.
Okay, so just for to help Mr. Winter along here, so we're going after the bracket, we're typing in the information. Is that agreeable to everyone?
Yeah. We're all caps or anything?
I think just bolding like the rest of it. I don't want it all caps.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Do you want to state in the agreement period or in the agreement with the client?
That's exactly what I was going to ask. It seems like maybe it's a little ambiguous to just say agreement, but or client agreement or something to make it clear.
Yeah, I think with the client or, yeah, because there's lots of different contracts you can be. That's where it gets a little messy, so.
Applicants use this a lot too, though.
Sorry?
Applicants use this and they won't actually have a contract on it.
Isn't it called the pre-inspection agreement?
If you said client agreement, that's probably good because an applicant is going to need to create one to meet the standards for the submittal, right? So that's probably perfect. I don't know if the bracketed section makes a lot of sense to anybody other than create a model page. I don't know, it just... is a little...
You're the one that came up with this.
I probably did. And, you know,
just for the record...
Let's take it a grow as you age, right?
Just for the record, for minutes and such, state your
name. I'm sorry, David Swartz.
That'll help everybody else at the end.
I'd like to... it's John Elson. I'd like to alter what I just recommended per the Standards of Professional Practice New Standards Draft 2.2
Inspectors shall, before the inspection report is delivered, enter into a written agreement with the client or their authorized agent that includes. So now the question becomes, I think what we should state here is the following 5 points must be included in the written agreement with the client.
Or authorized agent.
If you want to say that.
I just say an agreement ought to cover that. That way you don't have to be specific.
This is good. This is right out of the purpose and scope. Written agreement with the client.
Keep going.
Or their authorized agent.
I don't know if we need to be that specific. I think agreement covers both.
Written agreement.
You're saying get rid of everything after the word agreement.
All you need is written agreement. That's because who are you going to have the written agreement with? I mean, I don't
with
need
the
to
client. Understand. I think it should be clear. It's with the client.
Or the representative agent, like a realtor. So I don't know if you need to do that. I think just the as long as it's in their agreement, that's all you care about.
So it's a regular practice to contract with the realtor instead of the individual?
The realtor does have authority, yeah, to sign for the buyer.
But if there's new language, I would back mimicking as close as possible the new language so we line up with it just to make it...
So spell it all out?
I agree. Okay. I think it should be spelled out per the standards.
Okay. This is Roger Skaggs. Yeah, written agreement with the client. That's what I said.
Or their authorized agent. So there should be a there before... Kurt, there should be a there before... Before the word authorized agent. Thank you.
Okay, that was a lot of good, healthy discussion. I think we got a fine document that should hopefully, knock on wood, work for years to come, should the board next week decide to accept it.
And Keith, I'd like to thank you for your efforts. You did a great job.
Oh, sure. Except for my punctuation.
Is there anything else? Otherwise, we will close the initial discussion on this, and I'd ask for a motion from someone.
So just one more point, back to Judith's point about calling it a laundry room. Should we also just strike the word room from note 93 and call it a laundry area or something like that? It's not always a room.
Yes.
Laundry area. That's what we need. That's Roger Skaggs.
We'll take one more question from the floor from the public and then close it up. So, please name and then one your stop.
It's Andrew Harshman again. And towards the end of 93, we talked about this document is not supposed to define the SOP, but again in 20. Saying auto reverse and prep photoize is defining the SOP. So it's just a thought. The SOP doesn't say those, but this document defines what we're supposed to do. So it's just a nice thought to take those out.
I personally think it's a safety issue. I think auto reverse is very important, and for it to be in there is fine. By the way, this is Keith.
I agree.
Okay, does anybody need a 5-minute break to look at this overall document here and then come back for just to ponder in your minds?
Motion to take a break.
Okay, let's do it. It's 11 o'clock on the dot. All right, we will come off a break from the break, and we have everyone still here. So I believe... if we're going to share the screen again, and it's sharing now, we will do one last review of the last item there on the text for header for item two. Okay. The following 5 points, or maybe it's easier if you read it, Kurt. I can't. The angle isn't so good. That's the reason I'm using it. Yeah.
The following 5 points must be included in the written agreement with the client or their authorized agent.
Okay. All right. Having heard no more discussion, I'd like to entertain a motion on item 5C and the document that has been on the screen and prepared and working through.
Mr. Chairman, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the report checklist as revised.
This is John Elson. I'm second.
Is there any further discussion? Any other discussion? Nope. Okay.
No discussion. I just want to make it clear that we have a version number of today's date on the new document.
I would say that if this is being finalized, it would go before the board, which is, again, next week, to make sure that they get a review of it as well.
So it'll be a week later.
Okay. So the date will change.
If there are updates required of it, right now the version of this document will be today's date. That's that will be presented to the board, and then the board can review it at the next board meeting. If they would like additional changes, they may recommend it. It comes back to this committee for them to review those.
So if they don't make any changes, Roger, then the revision date would remain today.
All right. Thank you for the clarity.
Okay, having no more discussion, we'll go with we'll do a roll call vote on this one because there's a lot of stuff going on. Mr. Winter.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Skaggs?
Aye.
Mr. Elson?
Aye.
Mr. Boyle?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes.
Excellent. All right. Motion passes. So that takes care of 5C. On to 5D, discussion of possible creation of an EAC investigation matrix. And in there, Mr. Smith, is there some discussion that you'd like to have on this subject?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just think there's got to be a little more common references for EAC members when they're finding issues with reports. And I think by putting a matrix together, now we can talk about, if you guys are in agreement, we can talk about how many items. But I think this would help with the EAC enforcement and make things standard. So it's too arbitrary. You know, one EAC may say, hey, 10 items is fine, it's no big deal. Another guy may say, no, 5 is fine, 10 is too many. So that's the idea.
All right, I see some, these are just numbers based on my understanding shown here on the screen. There's no rhyme or reason to the 1 through 6 or 7 through 10. They're just for discussion purposes only, and I'd like to get some, maybe hear from enforcement to see what's already done. Maybe this whole just discussion to go there. So,
it's working. Yeah. Currently, we have a guidance document with 1 to 10 being a letter of concern as a recommendation to the board if they're minor in nature, clerical, missing. If any of those 10 are major, we wouldn't issue a letter of concern. So each case is specific, is different. So let's say there's 10 SOPs missing, but they're clerical. Based on the expert, we would recommend a letter of concern based on the EAC or the assessor to the board to make a final determination.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I just wanted to point out, just for the committee's benefit, in case you're not aware, matrix document simply would be a recommended starting point for looking at any given case. The two things that the board always has to keep in mind with enforcement are consistency across various individuals while still examining the individual characteristics of each case. And a matrix document assists with that by providing a presumptive starting point based upon certain objective criteria, and then the board can deviate from that, mitigate or aggravate based upon the individual characteristics. So this would simply be a tool for the board to use or the EAC to use in getting a general starting point for a case.
I wish I would have said it that well. That's exactly what I was saying.
Just for clarification, and please, Orlean, correct me if I'm wrong, our assessor of case assessor, he does not make recommendations as to any kind of violations. He makes a recommendation whether or not this proceeds to an EAC or not. That is, and then he just reviews the report and points out any possible violations.
Correct. Yeah, and on this, it does say EAC report deficiency matrix. So this is for the EAC members.
Right. I just want to make sure that it's clarified that our assessor does not tell us if it needs an LOC or anything like that. He just gives us a recommendation, EAC or no EAC.
So, this is John Elson. I don't know, 5 years, 6 years ago, when I originally volunteered for the EAC, I'm not sure if we had the four choice overviews that I think we're still using, although that seems to have migrated, if that's the correct term. Could you comment, Orlean, on how this may or may not impact those on-site decisions that each EAC member has to come up with?
Do you mean the severity?
Yes.
1 through 4?
Yes.
That's no longer being used.
Okay. So would this, Keith, be a means to supplant that or provide EAC members with something comparable to what that system used to be?
I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, I guess it would be very similar. But this is just for the report itself. It's not talking about anything else. And they, you know, the report, you shouldn't see a lot of errors. You shouldn't see 21 errors or anything like that, because people should have their software up to date and ready to go. And that's all it is. It's a software issue most of the time.
My general thoughts on this one is that, you know, we got listed there, no action, missing 1 to 6 items. And thinking of the health, safety, and welfare, I mean, some of the items might be a little less impact to the public, but, you know, what if you know, we were going off on the dryer vent thing for a while. What if, say, one of the ones that potentially has more impact to the health, safety, and welfare, what if they had 6 of those ones on there and then the rest of the report was good versus someone who didn't check one that didn't really impact folks? I mean, I wouldn't want to get locked into there's this 1 through 6 and we're saying, okay, you missed some that might be more impactful to folks versus non. Just thoughts on just going with an arbitrary number. I know we could go down a rabbit hole on this and say, well, these items maybe count as 2 points, and this one's 1, or have, you know, you could do all these different things on how it impacts folks. I just, having a general number here versus the way it's been working, and the EAC performs their duty and provides their thoughts up through the investigator to the board. The board then makes the determination at that time based on what the items were that were missed.
Okay, so if they're very important items and they are definitely negligent in something, this is specifically for the report itself. It's not topic related. So if it's something that's serious, you're going to weigh in on other things to pose as a remedy. Yeah.
So you're talking about, as I think you bolded and underlined, so this is only if they don't even talk about it at all. They skipped over one of the items and just blew past it. Yeah. That's what you're talking about for this. So this would add to anything else that might be in the review as far as the EUC.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is John Elson. I think if this is used as a guideline, it is a helpful, it is potentially helpful document for allowing us to encapsulate what it is that we've just been presented with and ponder, okay, what, by order of severity, what should we really be thinking about doing with this? Is that a fair summation? Okay. So, that being the case, the question is, how do we establish this and communicate this to the EAC members without getting caught up in the weeds, per Mr. Chairman's comments? Because I agree with you, you start to get into something and you say, well, you missed six safety issues, you know, you didn't report on the fact that there's a huge drop-off at the front of the house, that if your mother's there and she steps off of it, she breaks her leg. You didn't comment on those things. So I think it's great as a start, but I think we probably have to clarify it somehow with the members that this is just a guideline.
And that would be up to staff. At the end of the whole EAC meeting, that's when who's ever running it, they're going to know the difference. And then they could communicate that to the EAC members during their determination.
If I can add some clarification. So at an EAC, the EAC members look at the SOPs that may or may not be missing. They come up with a number, and it's common practice to ask the EAC if the SOPs are minor reporting issues or something that's a life safety issue. So we do get clarification. Is this serious? Is it a public harm, or is this just a reporting clerical error?
And is that a policy that you guys put in just a couple years ago?
It goes back with the guidance document. But we do...
Oh, you got rid of that.
We do
severity
have...
Severity is what you got rid of, right?
Yes, but we do go by ARS 32128, which is disciplinary action statute, which gives the board authority to do any disciplinary action or no disciplinary action. The EAC does look at that and gives their recommendation. We put it into a report, goes to the board for their final determination. But we do ask the committee if it's a life safety issue or if it's a clerical, missing, inaccurate, something minor, or is it something very serious?
Well, that's fine. I think you can still do both of those.
May I ask a question, Orlene? So there was a determination to get rid of the four, whatever we called it,
the
levels of severity. Yes, there was a determination to no longer use that.
Yes.
Okay.
So that, Scott?
That was based on legal advice.
Okay, I presume that, but thank you. So let me ask you from a practical standpoint, as in your role as the head, would something like this matrix be helpful to you in encapsulating and summarizing the specific recommendations from a case, or would it make it more complicated?
I mean, I think it'd be difficult to answer because every case is different. Every allegation, every SOP, they're different. Something could be very minor, something that's a reporting software issue, or it could be something that's that the home inspector missed that's life-threatening. So it could be beneficial, but it would just have to be very specific.
Okay. I just a thought, the hypothetical here, as this is supposed to be for report deficiencies only, if going through the EAC process, and this is probably to you, Orlene, you go through the EAC process, they're missing, you know, 12 items. You go through, you ask them, are these safety concerns or are these clerical? And the answer is clerical all the way through. Would that then activate this matrix?
Okay, once again, all of these items on the report checklist that we're using, they should all be in your software, so it should be stated. I think missing any more than, I just can't see anybody missing more than five, to be honest with you. So, I mean, if we're going to try to hold somebody responsible for a good inspection report, I think you've got to have something to fall back on as far as, you know, for the EAC review.
And to clarify, Keith, what I was just saying is that I'm trying to find when this would be used, and that was kind of my hypothetical situation, is that the EAC does not find life safety issues, but does find that these are just missing, and they don't think it rises to that higher level. And therefore, because that situation is now occurring, that a matrix such as this would then be utilized by staff to look at this and say, this is some guidelines for you EAC members with what you've just told us. Is that kind of the idea?
And it's John Elson. I think that the complexity of these situations comes into, at least from my standpoint as an EAC member, a person who has a major complaint that comes in, the major complaint, for whatever reason, we don't concur with, right? And then the person's entire report gets reviewed, which is per the state statutes. Is that proper, the term?
Yes, due to the investigative process established by the statutes, yeah.
Due to the investigative process established by statutes, thank you. And what happens in that instance, a practical matter, then each of the EAC members is trying to figure out what the level of severity is when the original basis for the complaint basically has been negated, let's say, or whatever the proper term is. And that's the reason that I think we need to have something like this as a guideline to be able to derive some level of understanding between the EAC members. Otherwise, without your four severity component, which is also part of this, we're swimming without any guidelines at all.
All right, I think I'd like to request staff take a look and see in the, like say, the past year or two, based on the cases that the overall Board of Technical Registration has seen, if any of this type of matrix would assist at all. My thought is, or my inclination is, that there may not be too many cases where they were just missing items and there's another combo effect in there. I just want to see if it's actually even a useful, if it'll even be a useful tool, because if there's always, okay, they missed a couple items, but there was always some type of safety or some other item in there that would bring it off of this list, then would it even be used? And so I think just some research and table it until the next meeting to see if it, and re-agendize it to give some thought to see if it's even useful. But any thoughts on that?
This is Keith Smith. The whole idea of this is I was trying to address the issue where home inspectors have over 30% of the violations, and I'll bet you 90 to 95% is report writing. And without having something to help, you know, this is the way I think that we can do it. You know, at the end there, you've got peer reviews. I don't see peer reviews on recommendations anymore, and I think it's a very good thing to have.
You know, I think it could be a good tool. I just want to make sure that it would even be used based on, again, just report deficiency only. I'd like to just, and Judith.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. We have worked extensively on updating a guidance document, to be used with complaints. I brought up the point with Orlean and Kurt and staff. I said that I feel like there might need to be a revision on the guidance document that we have to use for home inspector complaints, separate from the current guidance document that we have. So I appreciated Keith, you know, bringing this up and wanting it to be agendized so that we could talk about it, because I don't know that the current guidance document that we have meets the needs of the extensive amount of home inspector complaints that come in under different different issues, let's say, than what we're presented with engineering and things like that.
I will keep this one internal just for another couple minutes.
Do you have a comment, Orlene?
I guess that's just my thought, just open for discussion on if we want to, because I'm assuming this would be, if we like this, then we pass it on for the EAC's use as a tool or modified to the guide, but I'd like to do some more research on it. I think the whole staff should take a look at it a little bit more to kick it around. Again, come back and say, yes, you know, this document would have helped on X number of cases. My thought is that it's going to come back and say, look, we had all these cases, which there have been a number of cases for home inspectors, but it's going to be like, it wouldn't have fallen under any of these. And so I don't want to put something together just to put something together that might make it even more confusing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, do we have to approve this, or can you just do it internally?
No, and I appreciate what Scott's suggesting, that we take it and maybe try to rework it a little bit more using our guidance document that we have, what you've suggested, and just maybe talking to, I don't know. I just think it needs some more thought. I don't think what we're presented with right here is ready to just go.
And just for reference, in answer to one part of your question, the document would actually have to be approved by the board for use.
Yeah, so I'm going to just direct staff to take a look at this, come back with some analysis from past cases to see if this is there, and if there's any other items that pop up during that review, to please add some more text to this or any other thoughts that might be useful if EAC reviewers kept bringing up the same type of topic or something. Let's do that and then bring it back. So that's what we'll do with this one. We're going to table it, push it forward, get some more information.
I just want to say one thing. I would, while they're going through this process, just recommend that they make, give people the ability to correct their report instead of issuing a letter of concern or something like that that's going to stick with them permanently. It seems like it would be appropriate during a lot of these circumstances to just let them correct the report.
In most cases, on these correcting of the reports, it's been months, or it's been quite a bit of time period, so even though if you correct a report, the person might have already moved into their house. I don't know what they're really going to... Well, it's good. We'll add that to the list of topics there, of thing, and bringing it back to the this committee for discussion. So I think I'll just leave it in internal on this one. See what comes back, and then have a further discussion on there, because I think we need information from staff as to how this might do anything. Okay. All right. That takes care of 5D. Let's move. I want to go to 5F real quick for the substantive policy statement number 11 here. And then I believe, Kurt, this one's on here just as an update, or what do we... I saw the document in here. There wasn't a track changes, so it wasn't easily seen what we're doing here.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for clarification, the Legislative and Rules Committee had reviewed basically all of our substantive policy statements. However, when they came upon this one, they thought it would be better that this committee were to review it to see if it's still up to date, whether or not it needs to be updated or stricken or just left alone.
Okay, so the task is leave as is, modify, or delete. Okay, let's see. So we got the piece in there. This one has been around since, 2009 was the last time it was issued in there. It's always good to potentially hear about some information on why it was envisioned in the first place. Are there any discussions here? Otherwise, I'm considering opening it up to others, but what's any discussion internally?
I could go either way. It doesn't matter to me, but I think David's the one that wrote it. Let's see what he says.
So we have the person that potentially wrote it. So well, in that case, let's open up to the public for anyone that might have any thoughts, since we do have a couple of people here in the audience. Won't happen every time, but we'll open it up here. So again, please mention your name and spend a few minutes with some discussion, please.
David Swartz. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This came about as a result of an EAC that I was involved with, where the client had chosen to exclude from the inspection the spa. So the inspector did not have to evaluate the spa. And it became important to define where it would begin and end to be a part of the spa system. So we had decided when it's a exclusive to that device or that system, from that point on, you can exclude that and you would not have to inspect it. So if you think about it practically, the breaker on the electrical side, the breaker and beyond to the spa could be ignored. The bus bar is not specific to that, right? And then similarly, if it had an autofill or something like that, the where an anti-siphon protection device would come out of the feed line, it would, from that point on, not be part of the inspection of the spa. You would not have to inspect that. So we needed to know the boundaries for when we can exclude something. Many of us will go beyond, and we're welcome to go beyond the standards, but we need a delineation. So that's why that exists. The other thing is, just to remember, it's always a good idea, we did not do this, but to look when you're doing a rules change to see if you can get rid of some of these substantive policy statements and put them in the standards or something like that. It's just nice to do, and we've done it in the past, but it was not really evaluated. I don't know that it fits very easily, but that's why it's there.
All right. Knowing that the board, whenever something were to come up, could use this or not use it, add it. I mean, let's get the substantive policy statement. I mean, it's the board at the time, correct, Mr. Donald, on their interpretation of these as it may apply to whatever case comes before them.
Exactly, yes.
All right. So I don't have any comments on it. I think it's a good idea to have some text in there to help provide potential guidance for folks on where things start and stop if someone asks something to be excluded. So does anybody else have any discussion on it?
Not discussion so much as just to point out that what David said was correct. If it was important enough to put into a substantive policy statement, we should have considered to have it put in rule, because that's, to me, is a Band-Aid. If it's that important, it should be added into the rule.
Okay, so since it's before us, do we need to vote to keep it a thing? Is that what the request was?
I would believe that if there's no action to be taken, you can just not have to make a motion to that effect. Sorry. You can also recommend it to keep it, send it to the board for their concurrence.
And the board's already, I mean, I guess it's this board. The board in 2009 when they did it, so it's just basically sending it to the board for them to review again to see if they feel it's still a statement, or we have no motion before this committee and then it also stays as is.
If you want to keep it and you feel like it's important and it needs to be there, I would suggest that you make a motion to forward it to the board, recommend keeping it, and we'll update it. In this, not the technical language, but it's listing people on there that we don't know, and it shows it hasn't been touched since 2009. So Just in this, the same spirit of we've been reviewing all of the really old policy statements, deciding whether they were of value, do they need to stay, do they need to go. This one in particular is looking for the HIRSC to give their opinion on, and then let's take it back to the board.
Okay, with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll go.
All right, you go.
It's Roger Skaggs. I don't want to make a motion to accept the existing substantial policy statement, number 11.
And forward to the overall board? For
and forward it on to the BTR board.
Is there a second?
This is Keith Smith. I second.
Any further discussion? No? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion passes. We'll see if it can be added to the current board agenda or future board agenda. All right. That takes care of number F. Let's keep on going to 5G, the definition of repair.
Mr. Chairman, I'm the one that brought this one up, and it's because of an issue we had at a board meeting. I think the Rules Committee could kind of shed some light on what are other words or what other actions are similar to repair. And we had an issue with termite treatment. Was not considered repair, but if it's a treatment, to me that seems like it would be repair. Do you remember this one?
I recall it. I'm just pondering the definition of repair and where, if anywhere else in the revised statutes or anything. If Mr. Donald knows, or if he needs some time to review this and come back and provide some thoughts maybe at the next meeting on repairs.
Actually, Mr. Chair, this would be something that the committee could discuss, but is going to have a difficult time doing anything with simply because whether or not something constitutes a repair is going to be analyzed when the board looks at a specific case to determine whether or not there's been a statutory violation. The board statutes do not necessarily contain a definition that would encompass something like the case that is being discussed. The HIRSC could make a recommendation to the board for a future statutory change to include or to encompass that type of a thing. But for practical purposes, this wouldn't be able to impact any existing cases.
How about a substantive policy? Would that work?
Well, the board can issue a substantive policy statement to clarify their present understanding of a statute. It cannot expand the statute, as that would be an illegal legislative act. So depending upon how the committee recommended to the board it be done, the committee could potentially find wording that may provide some further definition, but it would be likely very difficult to do to try to find a way to provide a substantive policy statement indicating that the board would interpret potentially the word repair as including things that are not included in the statute.
So would you like to try to craft something up, but I think I concur with Mr. Donald that it's going to be, defining the word repair and nailing it down to a specific thing would be tough and be left up to the board, just like I believe they opined and pondered during that meeting on what repair was in that context.
And then, correct me if I'm wrong, Kurt, I think they asked for it to come to this committee for discussion.
Jack Gilmore had requested it.
But there is no definition of repair in our statute or rule.
Yeah, that's where I'm stuck with. That's what my original question was. Is there something we can hang our hat on for the word repair? And I couldn't find anything, and that's why I
This is John Elson. I'd like to reference the standards as they are the draft of October 27th of 2023, new standards draft version 3.0. And under 2.2C4, state any systems and components so inspected which were found to be in need of immediate major repair, and any recommendations to correct, monitor, or evaluate by appropriate persons. So the problem with getting into a discussion about repair is now we get into a question about what does the term immediate mean? What does the term major mean? And this is what the standards state, immediate major repair. So we're already subjecting inspectors to an interpretation of this based on the standards. I agree there's some level of misunderstanding perhaps of what a repair is, but right here we're saying immediate major repair. And so now if we start to get into this, we get really deep in the weeds on something and we'll start to wordsmith almost everything in the standards, in my opinion.
And if I may, it actually is a little bit more complicated than that, because that is the standard under the standards adopted, incorporated by reference by the board under R-430-301.01A. R-430-301.01B exists at the same time and separately from that. So the board incorporated the standards, but at the same time under Section B, that is a separate B3, perform or offer to perform for an additional fee. That is an entirely separate responsibility, and so one may violate that without violating the standard under the incorporated standards or vice versa.
So, Mr. Smith, would you like to report back to the board the findings on this at the next board meeting?
I will, and that's what we're trying to address, is the professional code of conduct. And, yeah, I'll take that on.
Summarize what was here, right? Is that the right way to do it, Judith Kurt? Okay, all right. Well, thank you for volunteering, Mr. Smith. Oh, sure. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. All right. Did H already? Last one on here is 5E, new home builder requirements for third-party inspections.
Mr. Chair, that's one of mine as well. And I thought we talked about this a couple of meetings ago, but there's a home builder, and I know they can ask for whatever they want, but they actually are requesting health cards, and I think that's kind of personal, and I just don't see is there something we could do to kind of talk to these guys and say, hey, that's a lot of personal information, shouldn't have to do that.
You may want to direct that to our legal counsel.
I was going to phrase the question here.
Health insurance card.
Yeah.
Well, any of these, this topic, it would seem, it's going to tie into a revised statute or rule or something if we could, in fact, do anything at all. So we will bring in our Mr. Donald to provide his opinion on where, if we have any legs to stand on with doing anything.
Certainly. Unfortunately, this board regulates the practice of certain professions. It does not regulate the ability of a third party to make a request to a professional they're hiring, however. So the agency that may be able to do something about that would be the agency that regulates the profession of the individuals who are requesting that information. In that case, it may be ROC who may have to seek some kind of a statutory change to try to impact what their registrants are able to request. I don't know that you'll get anywhere with that, simply because, again, they wouldn't really have the ability to prevent their registrants from asking for information from somebody they're intending to hire or not hire.
Here's my comment, Sean Elson. Couple things. Number one, I'm an ROC registrant. Number two, I've been an inspector for a very long time, and Keith and the other gentlemen on this committee, we continue to deal with an amped up attitude on the part of builders who by nature or by fact are not hiring us. The people that are hiring us are the buyers of the property. So the builders actually shouldn't be able to mandate what our qualifications are to come onto their property. Would be the same thing to allow sellers of homes to mandate what our qualifications are to come and inspect their home. So I have a huge problem with the fact that the builders are increasing those requests. I'm sure you've all had those, and you have to fill out another form, and here's another, you know, show me your $1 million indemnification policy, and so forth and so on. I don't think they should be allowed to do that any more than a seller should be allowed to ask you to see your insurance before you inspect his home.
Yeah. All right, I just wanted to bring it up for discussion, basically, so...
Okay, no, I was just pondering a few things. So, okay, all right. So, topic closed?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that takes care of 5E, and that takes care of all of 5. We already took care of 6, the training, number 7, future agenda items. So this is the time if anybody has any items they'd like to throw on a future agenda. Anybody have anything?
I'd still like to come back at some point in time and talk about expanding training to include report writing, which is something that we've been talking about for at least a year.
When you say, just to clarify that, when you say expanding training, are you suggesting we have discussion on continuing education?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a different subject. No, I'm not talking about continuing education. I'm talking about the idea of having an expansion of training on the front end, okay, for applicants to learn how to properly write reports for the state of Arizona.
So to clarify again, are you talking about another change in rule to ask for something that we can't currently ask for, or a discussion on the original education requirements, or how we can add report writing?
Right, and how we can potentially add report writing, yes.
Okay.
I mean, that sounds like a rule change. Is that the direction we would go with that?
We will agendize that and explore that topic with all available avenues.
Streets. How about the streets, not avenues?
Oh. Okay, any other potential topics for the next meeting? All right, having heard none,
do you want to keep five
the next
B,
item?
5B, I'm sorry. 5B was the one that...
Related to... we already pushed for item one item that will be on the future agenda that was already previously talked about was the when staff returns information on 5D related to the discussion on possible creation of an EIC investigative matrix. So that is already on the next agenda for if the information is available for them to come and provide feedback on that matrix. Anything else?
And the EIC thing. That I came up with, right?
Yeah, that's 5D, what I was just talking about, yeah. Okay, and then future meetings. What's the calendar look like for the next year here? What are we feeling with the topics that are up for discussion? I know it'll take a little while for staff to review the information for the EAC investigation matrix. With all the other items, I'd want at least probably 2 months for them to be able to take a peek at that stuff? Or is this more quarterly? What's the what's been the history of this one? Every 3 months?
It varies on basically, you know, what we have, what kind of agenda items we have. every other month, and then it's once a quarter, and then it's every 6 months. So it's been all over the place.
It doesn't really follow a specific. It's usually just the requirements at the time. So, for instance, if you guys did not finalize the supplemental checklist, we'd probably be looking for another meeting fairly quickly. It's just up to you how when do you guys want to meet. It's very open and free, really.
Okay, well then I will briefly open it up. Based on the request to dig into some of the older information to review the EAC investigative matrix item 5D, would you hazard a guess what time period you might need for that? 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months? I think that's really the only thing really setting up maybe the next meeting that's time critical.
Well, I mean, we don't have a lot of subject matter anyway. I mean, we could go for several months, I think.
I'm thinking more like three. But
I would recommend June.
Okay.
You mean prior to July 1st?
Okay. All right. So let's do it in June sometime. How's what's the calendar look like for June? I'd say probably before the board meeting, just in case anything is before to the board. That's the 25th is the board meeting. I know there's a NCARB meeting, I think the week before, or is it NCARB? Yeah, that's June. I'll just insert some Jeopardy music right here.
Can we sign it at a later date, or do we have to do it today?
That's a good question. Can we? Do we have to set a time now, or can we be determined later?
What, Tuesday, June 11th?
June 11th works for me.
There's been a request for June 11th.
Yes.
There's a lot of things to shuffle in there.
Canon, we leave the next day for NCARB.
Oh. You leave but the 12th? Do you guys leave the 12th?
That's all right. Yeah. By noon anyway.
So, I guess that would work.
You want to go a week earlier?
That'd be nice to have a week earlier, just
you
so it's.
Go the 4th? The 4th?
Yeah, let's do the 4th. Julie will be out, but we'll forgive her.
Are we doing 9:30?
9:30 or 9?
30 is good.
9:30.
Traffic.
Yeah.
9:30. Roger's got a long drive.
9:30 on the board.
Okay. We'll look forward to the meeting invites, which are always very nice. Okay. Future meeting is set. We won't determine any future meetings past that at this time. We'll determine future meetings after at that meeting. All right.
Well done.
I call this meeting adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Well done.
Right on the button. It's noon, exactly.
Look at that. Who stalled that?
It had to be our new chairman. We're no longer being recorded, correct?